The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
He's a nobody.
They get it to Embiid, and Embiid can't handle it. Three from Scott. Yes! Mike Scott, his biggest moment as a Sixer. The three-pointer puts him up two.
Man, that one had everything but some biting, scratching, and X-Pac coming off the top rope. This is the Sixers Talk Podcast. The Sixers are up 3-1 against the Brooklyn Nets in the first round. Danny Pommels, level-headed Paul, a.k.a. Paul Hudrick, here welcome you to an exciting recap of what happened in this game. Because, Paul, I know you were there. We'll let you have the first say of just exactly how this game affected you and impacted you, because I can't wait to hear what you have to say from being front and center of this one.
Well, front and center is a little that's being a little generous. I was in the second level, so I didn't quite see.
Well, we saw John Clark getting run over right there during the melee. I thought you were right next to him.
I know. I was not right next to him. I don't know how he got that. I don't know how he got that treatment, but I was I had a good view of it, and when it went down, it was nuts, and everyone exploded in the arena. And like, it's funny because when you first saw it, when I saw it from my perspective, it looked like Ben Simmons charged at Dudley after all was said and done. So I was like, oh my God, they might lose Butler and Simmons for Dudley. Like, that would have been the greatest move Dudley ever did, was to get Butler and Simmons ejected. But, you know, obviously it turns out he only gets Butler ejected. Man, Dudley, what is this guy? Like, what the hell?
Dude? You know what? Let's just get right in. You know, we're talking about the third quarter fight because that's just what everybody remembers. And you heard it here in our open, just exactly how it went down. And it looked like it did look like Simmons pushed Dudley. It looked like Dudley pulled him down. The refs.
He did. He pulled him down.
The refs ignored that, whatever that interaction was between them. You know what? I get the villain part with Dudley. I understand it 200%. I've said it time and time again. He's got the 80s dad bod. He's got shaped like an Idaho potato. But when I listen to him in the post-game press conference, Paul, and he's talking about, you know, I'm not going to make it easy on these guys to come in here and elbow Jared Allen in the face and laugh about it afterward. And there was a one moment where he actually kind of got into it with Ben Simmons a little bit where nothing happened. And Ben was looking for a call from the referees. And that was before the third quarter altercation with about 8 minutes to go where all hell broke loose. But I don't know. I'm not feeling as villainous about Jared Allen – excuse me, about Jared Dudley as I did before the game, because I look at his comments afterward and I'm like, you know what? I probably would have did the same thing. If I'm a Sixers fan and that was Mike Scott, who was Jared Dudley, and, you know, the guys on the Nets had come at my best players or had, you know, laughed about it in the press conference. He's like, oh, well, you know what? I got a little feather in my cap that I'm going to hang on to, and I'm going to make sure they know that that's not allowed here. That's not tolerated. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I'm kind of cooling my jets a little bit on the Jared Dudley hate because I feel like, you know, he's just fighting for his team.
You know what? You had me up until – here's what it is, and Jimmy Butler said this after the game.
What?
I don't like coming up to a player from behind and shoving him, running up to a player from behind.
Oh, my gosh. He ran three lengths of the court to get to get to Embiid. And barely moved him at that.
Like, yeah, that's Bush League. Like, if you want to get in his face and you want to say something to him, I have no problem with that. But to shove him, especially a dude who, like, he just missed the last game. He's the other team's best player. Like, I'm all about you getting under another guy's skin. Like, yeah, like you said, like, if that was Mike Scott getting underneath the skin of another guy, I'm all for it. But I don't like the push in the back of a dude that's, like, that's not paying attention. Like I said, a guy who's missed a game already. That I didn't like. And Jimmy said that's why he went after him, because that's just not a move you do. That's Bush League stuff.
Piggybacking on what you said initially when we talked about the reactions to the fight, a couple minutes ago, Ty Johnson on the Outsiders, which I thought was, you know, that's our guy, 200% he was accurate on this one. He said, what you witnessed there was attempted robbery by Jared Dudley.
Exactly.
Because he was trying to steal two of the Sixers' best players so that the Nets had a chance to really put this thing in. It was a real fulcrum game. It was a real pivotal game. And going into game five on Tuesday, having this series tied at two games, I mean, if you're Kenny Atkinson, if you could read his lips when he ran into the melee, he was saying to Jared Dudley, we need you, we need you. And to me, the Sixers trailed after every quarter but the last one. And I got to give so much props to their defense, man. That fourth quarter defense holding the Nets to 17 points in the fourth quarter, not what I expected. I really thought this would be a game where they got – close enough to come back, but just could not get over the top, particularly without their fourth quarter scorer, Jimmy Butler, being out of the game. I didn't think they had enough to get over top, but Mike Scott comes through and his money when it matters most. He has been horrific.
Cashed out.
He has been horrific, though, from the three-point line during the series.
It doesn't matter when he hits a shot like that. That's why he's there. Cash out, baby.
That is why he's there. And it's funny, and I know you've seen this. Cash out was Mike Scott's quote after the game. So subtle, so understated, as he's known to be. But I know you saw this. I hope you saw this. There was a tweet rolling around from Jared Dudley's account about the Sixers acquiring Mike Scott and how he would help them space the floor with Embiid and Simmons on the court. I don't know why he's chiming in on the Sixers transactions like that, but to have that thing come full circle like that in front of our very eyes was pretty ironic. I got to add Old Takes Exposed so they know all about that. I don't know if you're familiar with that account, Old Takes Exposed.
Well, I am.
Yeah. So it was just a real full circle moment. I thought it was interesting.
It's fine analysis by Jared Dudley. You know, he got hit it right on the head. It's perfect.
Fantastic. No, but
it's funny. Like, you were talking about how you kind of never felt like they were going to get over the hump in this one.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I had a little bit of an my feeling was this: whenever Joel Embiid was in the game, the Sixers were an immensely better team than the Nets every time that Joel Embiid was in the game. So I felt like, I didn't know how Brett was going to use him in the second half. Obviously, he only played like 10 minutes in the first half, but then winds up playing 21 to 24 minutes in the second half. So I felt like as long as Embiid was in the game, at some point they were going to win just because he was that good. He was that dominant. This is like, for me, especially when you consider the circumstance and everything and missing the last game, this might have been like one of his best NBA games ever. Ridiculous.
Well, you mentioned Embiid, we got to throw his numbers out there so the people can understand why Mr. Paul Hudryk is so verklempt with the success that he had. 31 points, 16 rebounds, 12 of 22 from the floor. Can't forget the 6 blocks and 7 assists for Joel Embiid. I heard Amy Fadul say on the Sixers post-game live show that no other player in NBA history, NBA playoff history, has had those type of numbers in the postseason other than Embiid and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So
insane.
Let that sink in a little bit. But and you mentioned the minutes, Paul. I really think that the Sixers had no intention of playing Embiid that many minutes at all.
No.
But because Butler was out and they had to adjust and get a score in there, you know, to make up for the lack of scoring that they had with Butler's absence. You agree?
No, for sure. Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a part of it. And I also think, you know, it's a little bit of what I said. Like, Brett felt like, man, whenever Joe's in this game, like, we're the better team. And maybe he felt like, if I just ride Joe, if we could just ride him out for this, we could go up 3-1 and come back home and then figure it out from there. So I do think that's a good point, though, too, Danny, because, you know, they alluded to that after the game. I think if Jimmy Butler is in the game and playing, I think they win going away. Like, not a blowout, obviously, because it was a close game all the way. But I think they take it to them even more in that fourth quarter. Not that they could have taken it to them much more, but I think – and on both ends of the floor, you substitute Jimmy Butler for – with all due respect, how good Mike Scott was, you throw Jimmy Butler into that mix in the fourth quarter, and, that might have – they might have pulled away even sooner.
Well, Brett Brown – and you talk about matchups and who's on the floor and when and why and how Brett Brown's using them. He is caught in a coaching dichotomy. And it's really, I believe, testing his intestinal fortitude, his coaching prowess. It's testing his acumen because I know you were in that press conference, and he said this specifically about getting Joel the ball and integrating him and reintroducing him back into the lineup. He said it's a challenge. And he said he almost wants to get him the ball every time down the floor.
Can you blame him?
I don't. But think about it. He said sometimes it does get stuck and stagnant with him there. But with Joel in the game, it's kind of like you have this great gift that you have to figure out how to use it. The ball does get a bit stuck and stagnant with him there, because with Joel not out there, there's a lot more flying around. There's a lot more three-pointers. And he's described Joel, like I said, as a unique gift and a target that needs touches. And combining those two of getting Joel the touches, because he's so unique and because he's a matchup nightmare and causes so many problems for the opposing defense, you also have to integrate the style of play that the Sixers play when he's not there, where it's so much more free-flowing and more open court and transition basketball. So Brett Brown is caught in the lurch right there, trying to figure out how to make those two things coexist. Now, I look at Ben Simmons, and I am rock solid confident that Simmons would have had a similar game that he had in game three if Joel Embiid wasn't out there. But the rhythm was so much different, particularly from the onset, with the way Simmons was pushing the ball up court, because he pushes the ball into the front court and he has to kind of wait for Embiid to get into the front court. And he's kind of like hanging out in a bit of a, maybe 5 seconds of no man's land, where he's not really driving to the basket, but he's waiting for Embiid to get in the front court to get him the basketball. And that just slows him down a bit. I just noticed that time and time again where, Embiid's obviously inbounding the ball. He's getting the rebounds. He's throwing the outlet passes. And Ben's like a gazelle on the balls of his feet, just getting all the way into the front court and still waiting for Embiid to get there. It's just a different type of basketball. Not to say this is a worse style of basketball. I just don't think it plays to Ben's strengths as much as when Joel isn't out there.
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. But I also think that I think what Ben's smart at too is he takes the opportunities when they're there. And I think that's another thing you have to look at too. I think there are more opportunities in game three for him to push the basketball than there were in game four, because in game three, they played better defense throughout. Mm. And I think there are more opportunities for that. And the big thing I noticed too, when you talk about the offense in general and like integrating Embiid, did you notice how many pick and rolls they ran today?
I did see that.
A ton of pick and rolls. And you know what? Again, Brett Brown's a guy who gets a lot of criticism, and I get it. I get why he does from time to time, but you got to give him credit for this. He's listened to his players. Jimmy Butler, the whole thing, remember, that was all over pick and rolls. Jimmy Butler getting more pick and rolls. Tobias Harris getting more in the pick and rolls. So Brett Brown that's not a part of his offense. They really just, not a lot of pick and roll stuff. But with these two guys, he sees that he has two players that is what their strengths are. Their strengths are that, and he's integrating it more. And I mean, I couldn't even put a number on it if I had to even guess. They ran a ton of it, and it was really effective. And then I thought that opened up more stuff as the game went on. When Embiid was in the post, they were fronting him more.
Yeah.
I think Brett Brown's got to get a lot of credit for, there was a lot made of that last game where he really listened. J.J. Redick pointed out where he really listened to what his team was telling him, and he ran more stuff, based off that. And I think that there is like this good, happy medium that they all have going. I mean, we'll see when they get to, hopefully when they get to a tougher opponent in round two, but there's like a real gelling, I feel like, between Brett and this team offensively, where they're buying into Brett stuff, and Brett is also listening to them, and he's also, you know, forming some stuff to fit his player skill sets.
The Sixers, as a team, had a sloppy first half, 10 turnovers. I really thought, you know, they were down 9 at the end of the one. I really thought, just looking at Embiid out there after not seeing him, I really think he gets by on talent and athleticism. And I'm not sure, particularly when we know he's not quite in basketball shape because he's missed time or hasn't practiced as much. I'm not sure if it's dangerous because, you know, you see him at the beginning of the game. Jared Allen's playing off of him. He steps inside that free throw line and strokes a jumper. Then he floats through the lane and hits a little fall away because his touch is just so remarkable and he's such a matchup nightmare and do so many things with the basketball. I don't see, you know, as much, you know, his athleticism and his talent are getting him by, but I don't see as much of the conditioning and things like that, which will come with him playing regularly. And I'm not sure if it's dangerous that he gets by on so much of his talent as opposed to, you know, being in the flow of the game as much. I don't know if you notice, you know, him having, you know, so many advantages over the other players that I feel like it plays to him, you know, having those more opportunities and things like that. But I just don't know if it's a dangerous thing that he gets by on his talent and athleticism as much, or if he needs to play in the system more in order to help other guys get off as well.
I mean, I think today is an example of how it's when everything was going right today, when everything was clicking, it's an example of what it can be. And I think you've seen it at times this season when this starting lineup has been together. Like Joel Embiid, like, you know, for the reasons you mentioned, I mean, the guy, again, we talked about it a million times, he's a top five player in the league. So you'd be foolish not to run things through him because he's so great and because he's so gifted and because he does present such a mismatch. Particularly in this series, there is no one who can even come near competing with him in this series.
So you forfeit the way the pace slows down a little bit for the fact that he's such a matchup nightmare, is going
to
draw.
You have
fouls
to live with that, right? Yeah. When you have a player that is so uniquely talented like him, you have to fit stuff like. And again, it goes back to like the idea of Brett just fitting stuff around guys. Like you have to. This is like the challenge of being the coach, and this is what falls on Brett Brown, is figuring out how to make it all work and trying to get to everybody's strengths as best you can. Like if we're looking at a grand scheme of things, right? If we're looking at maybe like a series, especially like an NBA playoff series, like what's going to work better, running and gunning or the half court set with, you know, featuring Joel Embiid getting the ball on the post? Like what works better? And in the playoffs, it's the half court stuff that's going to be working better. And again, the pick and roll stuff. Like the transition stuff, like when you play the Torontos and the Milwaukees, that's not going to be there. They're going to take that away. Like it's not the kind of teams that you can run on. And that's why Ben Simmons has struggled against those teams. But I think right now, like you're seeing a nice mix of how when all the pieces kind of fit and when all the pieces are working, like what it can be. And, you know, it was a disappointment, again, not to see Jimmy Butler, because I thought he was excellent in the first half. He was really, really good. Yeah. I think he had like 11 and 4 assists, yeah. 2 steals. I mean, and then I think the bigger thing, like beyond the offense, like offense is great. And I think this team's always going to be able to score just because they have so many options. But, man, defensively, when they turn it on, when they come together, they can be ridiculous. Like that fourth quarter, like say what you will about this Nets team. Like, you know, I do think the Sixers – you know, are just too much for them to handle. Like, they can't play deep. Like, the Nets aren't a great defensive team, and they're going to struggle end.
Their best chance is to outshoot the Sixers.
Exactly. So to hold a team like that with so much firepower to 17 points in the fourth quarter of a game that they needed to have, like, that speaks volumes about what this team can be when everything is right defensively. And I think that's where they're going to get. To me, that's where they're – that's going to judge how far they go, not their offense.
And particularly without one of their best defenders in the lineup, not having Jimmy Butler. And we see a game here where the Sixers don't have Joel Embiid. We see a game here where they lose Jimmy Butler early and they're still able, you know, to get victories. And we won't count last game. We'll just say there's been 3 games now. So this has been 13 games now with this full starting lineup. Joel Embiid missed game 3. 13 games now with this full starting lineup. you know, we see them now 10-3 in those games. And I look at the way that, you know, J.J. Redick, you know, I'm going to push things, you know, forward to the fourth quarter a little bit, second half, what have you, because I definitely want to talk about Jonah Bolden as well, because I know he was a guy you thought should get some of those minutes
that
Joel Embiid had missed. But I tell you what, Paul, the J.J. Redick slander was heavy on my Twitter timeline before he hit that shot in the fourth quarter, because he was having a tough game, flat out.
He was.
But he was in such a funk that people were, you know what, you called me out for saying that, you know, they should get, you know, maybe a different rotation in there or rethink, you know, how to use Redick or what have you. You thought I was, you know, a little premature. People were calling for his head on, you know, our fans can get out of control. But
they sure can.
The slander was so heavy, and there was so much crow to be eaten after JJ hit that huge bucket. Tell me what it was like there in the arena as it's coming down to crunch time, let alone the Mike Scott three, but JJ hits a shot, and they're just going back and forth.
Well, that's what was so crazy. I'm sitting next to him, Kyle Newback, who writes for the Philly Voice.
Sure.
And we both were talking all game about, like, you know, how JJ was struggling, and we both said, like, but it doesn't matter because at some point it's going to matter.
Shoot
when,
or shoot. Shoot
exactly,
or shoot.
Exactly. Like, yeah. He's going to come up with a big three. Like, there's still a chance he comes up with a big three at some point, and then he did. And it's just, that's why with JJ, a couple things with him. Like, you can't ever give up because that's what he can do. He can – he's the kind of guy, he could go 0 for like his first 10 and then hit his next 10. Like, he's capable of that. He's done crap like that all the time. And then on top of that, again, like, you know, like I've said repeatedly, is just what he brings to this team offensively and what he opens up. And I think as a result of game three and how successful he was, how successful Ben was in that little dead dribble handoff stuff, I think the Nets really, really were gunning for J.J. Redick. I saw they were a lot more physical with him. Dinwiddie, he got called. I think J.J. went out with four fouls. But, like, Dinwiddie was grabbing and tugging him, and they were really being really extra physical with J.J. in this one. I think that was a big part of why he didn't get as loose as maybe he would have liked. But you
think that physicality isn't going to ratchet up when they play Milwaukee and Toronto, possibly Milwaukee?
But the point is, Danny, when he got his look, he buried it. And that's what I'm saying with JJ, is the kind of guy, that's why you can't just bury the guy. Like, you got to stick with him, because at some point there's a really good chance he's going to hit a big shot. And I think he actually enjoys the physicality of the game. When you're talking about a team like Milwaukee, I know Pat Connaughton was really getting in his grill that last game, and it seemed to fire JJ up, and he had a really good game against Milwaukee when that really close game at home. So I think that JJ Redick, you know, I understand the defensive issues and the concerns, but he's a guy, I don't know, he's a guy that to me is a big part of this team.
Man, he was money when it mattered most, however you slice it. Only made 3 of his 11 shots, but all 3 of those were three-pointers, and it seemed to come at crucial times of the game where they needed to stop a rally or slow down what the Brooklyn Nets were doing. Tobias Harris, tip your cap to that gentleman. He continues to play big minutes for the 76ers. He is out of whatever shooting slump he was in. That is a long gone part of the past, because he goes 10 of 20, 43 and a half, we'll say, big minutes of basketball. He goes for 24 points, didn't have 16 rebounds this game, only had 8 because Joel was back out here and he didn't need to play that role. But
he did have one huge one in the fourth quarter.
And I loved how they allowed Tobias to initiate offense. And particularly there's one play where he went from the backcourt right to the rim and one, cut the lead to 3 after Boban got a rebound off his missed free throw and converted one of his 2 free throws. But Tobias Harris initiating the offense, if you want to give props to Brett Brown, getting the ball, and Simmons is on the floor at these times when Tobias Harris is bringing the ball up, and sometimes Ben playing off the ball, I think, benefits him because he's able to crash the offensive board and get tip-ins and not have to worry about maybe being the first one back on defense all the time as the point guard. But I really enjoy that when Brett Brown allows Tobias to get the ball in his hands early in order to try to, you know, get his whenever he sees an opportunity.
Yeah, we've talked about the fact that they have three guys that can bring the ball off the floor on any given possession, which is, like, you know, how many teams have that? It's crazy to have three guys that are that gifted with the basketball in their hands, and they're all big and they're all physical. Like, it's a really interesting thing to have. And then when you're talking about Tobias, man, confidence is a hell of a thing, ain't it?
Like, oh, man.
It's crazy how he – if you were to look at the tape from games 1 and 2 – and then look at 3 and 4. This does not even look like the same basketball
But he's
player.
Shooting,
like,
the same shots. Same shots.
No, but I disagree with you a little bit in the sense that I feel like he's just been way more aggressive, and he's taking shots. Like, some of the drives and, like, some of, like, the, you know, the one play you alluded to where he just went coast to coast with it. Like, he wasn't doing that in games 1 and 2. It just wasn't there with him. He was settling for a lot of stuff and just didn't look right. He just looked like he was just out of sorts. But now he just looks like he is not – he's no hesitation in his game whatsoever. And, you know, like you said, Brett, you know, give credit to Brett for getting him the opportunity to bring the ball up the floor and get in some stuff and get in some pick and rolls early on. And, man, he is really thriving over the last two games. It's a really good sign for the Sixers that, you know – and, again, Butler was really rolling in the first half too. So it's a really good sign to see those guys really moving offensively and really really starting to click.
Man, what a feather to have in your cap as Tobias Harris is coming to life, particularly when Jimmy Butler gets the heave-ho and J.J. Redick is ice cold. The minutes behind Embiid in the front court, Boban Marjanovic was on a milk carton, we'll say,
yeah,
as he plays almost 12 minutes, only goes 1 of 3, 4 points, a far cry of the efficiency we had been enjoying from Boban in the other three games of the series. And you look at the bench altogether, and a lot more scoring from the bench compared to games past, particularly game 3, as the Sixers get a good amount of bench points. Mike Scott with 8, 3 of 6 shooting, and James Ennis following suit, 3 of 6 as well, with 7 points. So that's 15 big points off the bench right there. And you add in Boban's 4, that's 19 points off the bench, more than they got in game 3. What did you make of Jonah Bolden's appearance? Did it surprise you? Did you think he would be more effective? Because he had a couple of plays out there where it didn't amount to much.
Yeah, I thought he would be much more effective. I wasn't that surprised to see him, given that it did appear that they were trying really hard in the first half to limit Joel's minutes, which wound up working out obviously very well, so they could use him more in the second half. But I wasn't surprised. So that, from that perspective, I wasn't surprised to see him. Man, he looked like a rookie, and he looked like a rookie who hadn't played. I mean, he had a tough time out there. He was just really overselling, like really over aggressive, really undisciplined, and you could tell that Brett wasn't gonna deal with that for too long. Yanked him out pretty early. Even went to Monroe for literally a minute. And just neither guy could really give him what they needed. So that's it was a shame that Boban. Yeah, he came down to earth a little bit in this one. What I thought was interesting is, you know, in the series, he hasn't really been matched up that much against Jared Allen. And you saw that a lot more. Jared Allen had his most effective game in the series. And I think a big part of that was that Boban really had trouble with him in the pick and roll. And, like, you can see the Nets, you know, they went back. Like, Kenny Atkinson's a hell of a coach, too. I mean, he went back, he watched his film.
We got to
take advantage of this guy.
Well, we saw those lobs. That was a new wrinkle. Oh, yeah. We saw a lot of lobs, particularly from D'Angelo Russell to Jared Allen, Spencer Dinwiddie or Caris LeVert to Jared Allen.
Yep.
An adjustment that I didn't anticipate that, and give Kenny Atkinson props, because it wasn't as effective as they probably would have liked it has been, just because maybe Jared Allen wasn't finishing as strong. Or Joel Embiid was disrupting some of those plays. But there were a couple, you know, face-to-face, you know, manicure, pedicure, and the facials to Joel Embiid. Caris LeVert came down to paint on him one time, not on the alley-oop, but Jared Allen particularly had one where he came down right on Joel Embiid's head and dunked it. Joel Embiid, to his credit, his help defense was magnificent in this game.
Yes, he was.
With those 6 blocks, and he really ratcheted it up when Jimmy Butler got ejected, going to the basket strong, as well as the defense. I remember one sequence where he came down and scored on one end and had a block on the other. But I give Kenny Atkinson credit for that. I give Brett Brown credit for just really putting players, like you said, in positions where they could succeed. So we got Mike Scott on the floor in the guts of the game. You give Brett Brown, you know, I don't know exactly how the play was designed to go into Joel, where it got tipped away and he found Mike Scott there in the corner. But just like Tobias said in the post-game press conference, that Mike Scott shoots that shot all the time. I'm sure Brett Brown completely aware that that is Mike Scott's sweet spot. So he spaces the floor, has Mike in his money spot, and he cashes out, as Mike Scott said after the game. But a little bit of props need to be going Elton Brand's way for bringing Mike Scott in with Tobias and Bobby in that trade from the Clippers, because if we all recall, Elton Brand and Mike Scott played together while they were in Atlanta. So he knows Mike really well.
Yeah, sure did. You know, it's funny, Danny, because I feel like, what was it, like 2 days ago, you were trying to
– what was I saying?
You were getting up – you were getting –
remind me of what I said.
You were getting upset that the Sixers made that trade, and you were worried if the Sixers maybe had gotten taken behind the woodshed.
And I then did.
And then Tobias Harris goes out and –
that still remains to be seen, though. The jury's still out on that. I'll take.
Bobot, listen.
I'm excited about what I saw here in Game 4, but the jury's still out on the trade.
That's fair to be the jury still out, but my only point is you were ready to say that the Sixers may have gotten taken to the woodshed. Well, now you have Tobias Harris back-to-back monster games. Bobon has been really good 3 out of 4 games, and Mike Scott just hits the game-winning shot in this one.
Well, he hit the game-winning shot, and he finally came to life. I know you're just saying, but before he hit that shot, he couldn't hit an elephant in the butt with an ironing board. So
he's all right in this one.
He might have been all right in this one. I think great. For the series in general, he
nah, the series he struggled.
Yeah. So, yeah. The jury's still out on the trade. 2 first-round picks. If Tobias Harris doesn't re-sign, then that's something I might be regretting or feeling a little remorseful about. But all in all, as we move forward here and we look at how things transpired, in the fourth quarter, I'm looking at Ben Simmons. I'm trying to read his body language. Did you feel like there were a few opportunities where he was a little soft in the fourth quarter? There was a lob play where he didn't finish at the rim because maybe he didn't go with two hands or what have you. Were there any opportunities there where you felt like Ben could have asserted himself more? Because there are times, which is my point, when he's out there with Joel Embiid, that he kind of doesn't look for his offense as much, as is more concentrated on getting the ball in Joel's hands and letting him go to work.
I don't know. I felt like it was just maybe more a product of the offense and the way things were running. I didn't really see anything as far as an opportunity he passed up, or maybe like a shot he maybe should have taken or whatever. I saw him being in the flow of the offense. And this is a realistic flaw with Ben Simmons. When games are close in the fourth quarter, like when we go back to the whole thing with transition, like teams are playing, it's a half court game.
Right.
And that's, you know, as much as, you know, we're going to kill Jared Dudley for what he said, and it clearly fired Ben Simmons up. If Ben Simmons struggles anywhere, it is in the half court. So when the game gets tight and the game is narrowed down to that, it's not going to be conducive to what Ben does. But I thought Ben did a good job playing kind of more of, like, you know, like you were mentioning, you know, with Tobias bringing the ball up, like playing more of like a traditional 4 role and kind of, you know, being a screener and being a roller and setting up opportunities for others. I mean, I personally didn't see anything to me that was discouraging or anything like that. I think he just played his role. And, you know, it's unrealistic to think every guy is going to have it going every night or every guy is going to have a big scoring night. I think it just wasn't Ben. You know, Ben's turn was game 3 to have a big scoring night. And tonight was his turn to kind of be more in the background and, you know, set things up for others and play really, really good defense.
Yeah. Give Ben his props. 2-1 assist to turnover ratio. We'd like to see that a little bit more streamlined. 8 assists to 4 turnovers, but the kid didn't have a miss until the third quarter. He was, you know, contributing mightily, particularly as Jimmy Butler faded away. He was definitely ready to rise to the occasion. But hey, we will be seeing you on TV for Sixers Talk leading up to Game 5 here at the Wells Fargo Center in South Philly. We will come your way at 6:30, from 6:30 to 7 on TV. Hey, subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Danny Pommels and Paul Hudrick. Paul, any final thoughts as we think about how you saw this game? You said it was one of the craziest games you ever saw in person or saw.
It was. It was one of the, and it just, and everything, it was just like the crowd, and like it, when that moment happened, and it was just, it was pandemonium. It was like, you didn't know what was going to happen. Like, I really thought two guys were going to get ejected, and then it, you know, and then you could tell it fired up in B too. And it's, it was really a sight to behold. But I will ask you, Danny, you know, you do know why they put us on TV, right?
Why is that?
Because we're just too pretty to just have a podcast.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Hey, mama, I'm ready for my close-up. Paul Hudrick said it, not me. But, hey, check us out on TV. The podcast is always popping. Please subscribe. And, hey, we will join you for Game 5. Brooklyn, we hope to not see you again this season. Thanks for listening.
I don't want to go back.
Hey, Paul, we appreciate you making the trip up, and come back safely. And we'll catch you on TV with Sixers Talk. Thanks, everybody.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.